From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, December 11th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things officially started with
the Daily Denogram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. And it says, if you lend someone $20 and never see that person again, it was probably worth it. Besides, that $20 probably wasn't worth any more than the person you loaned it to.
You're worthless and uninteresting.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
This is it.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
So I assume.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
See, there you go. Oh, yeah, they're throwing those quizzes at us all the time. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1901. Guglielmo Marconi transmitted the first transatlantic radio signal from Poldhue, Cornwall, England, to St. John's, Newfoundland. His first message was, "Can you hear me now?" And it was on this day in 1972, Apollo 17 became the sixth and final Apollo mission to land on the moon. Basically, the crew went up there to pick up some more moon rocks and shut off the lights. The entire mission only got about 30 seconds mention on the nightly news.
And now for something completely different.
In the wake of Daniel Penny being acquitted, naturally there are those who are protesting. And this isn't really across racial lines, because if you recall, Daniel Penny had the support of a lot of blacks. A couple of them were on board that subway and saw the entire incident and basically defended Daniel Penny. I don't think he needs any further defense. He has been acquitted. Now, recall that it was at Alvin Bragg was the DA who was prosecuting him. Yeah, the same guy who went after Donald Trump. And it's common knowledge that Alvin Bragg is a tool of George Soros. So, in the wake of the acquittal, Senator Ted Cruz has some advice on what Daniel Penny's next steps should be. And he says that he should sue the hell out of Alvin Bragg. Quoting Cruz, he says, "Alvin Bragg is an absolute catastrophe. First, he indicted Donald Trump in a partisan case, and then he indicted Daniel Penny for saving the lives of other subway passengers from a deranged lunatic threatening to kill everyone. Penny should sue Bragg for malicious prosecution and hold this rogue Soros prosecutor accountable." Now, among the crowd, kind of echoing the comments, is none other than noted legal scholar, Harvard legal scholar, Alan Dershowitz. Now, Dershowitz has proclaimed himself over the years to be a Democrat. Ted Cruz is a Republican. Ted Cruz, in Alan Dershowitz's words, was the best, brightest law student he ever had. So, what does Dersh say? Well, he says, "I think the next step has to be the removal of Alvin Bragg from this role of district attorney. He's a disgrace to the office." Well, from Alan Dershowitz's lips to God's ears, I mean, Bragg should have been gone a long time ago. But you see, when it comes to that cartel headed up by George Soros, law really has little, if anything, to do with the mission at hand. There is the agenda that Soros wants. He wants it put forward, and he'll do anything in terms of piles and piles of cash to make it happen. Law really has no hold whatsoever on George Soros. Because he's so stinking rich, he really can get just about anything accomplished that he wants. As for Alan Dershowitz, he was talking to the crew over at Newsmax the other day in the wake of the verdict.
Sir, did you want to start off with just the immediate reaction to the not guilty verdict in the Daniel Penny case?
I have to admit, I was a little surprised. Having hung on the higher count, I was not expecting that they would so quickly acquit on the lower count. It probably shows that there were only one or two people in the original high count that hung based on their desire to see a conviction. So I think it's a good thing. Now, I think the next step has to be the removal of Alvin Bragg from the role of district attorney. He is a disgrace to the office. The two cases he brought should never have been brought. The case against Donald Trump, which was made up out of whole cloth, which to my mind involves unethical, unprofessional conduct by Bragg. And also this case, which should never have been brought either. He brought it only because of the racial component to the case and because of pressures from Black Lives Matter and other groups on the outside, both white and black radicals who wanted these cases to be brought, wanted this case to be brought, and who are going to continue to complain, even though there were obviously black members of the jury who voted to acquit as well.
Professor, what do you make of how quickly they came back with this verdict? And also, too, there's the civil case that he's also facing, too, Daniel Penny. Does that, given that he's not guilty on the criminal case, what happens to the civil case as well?
It'll be thrown out. There's no case there. Civilly, the only thing that will happen is that Penny will get an enormous amount of discovery and will get much more information that we don't now have about the alleged victim in the case. So my prediction is it will be withdrawn. I don't think they'll go any further. I don't think they'll get any kind of a verdict. Now, you know, maybe the city will settle if they sue the city as well. Mm. If I were the lawyers for the alleged victim, I'd probably think I'd have a better shot of getting some money from the city, which was sympathetic, obviously, to the victim, than from a poor former Marine who probably right. doesn't have a lot of money. So I don't think the civil case is going anywhere. This is not O.J. Simpson, where the civil case won after the criminal case lost. There was no case here to bring it all, either civil or criminal.
The next step, of course, is for Daniel Penny to get his lawyers together to handle the civil lawsuit that will be filed against him by the family of the whack job. And I'm sorry, I just don't remember the man's name. But, you know, Cruz isn't the only one calling for Penny to sue Alvin Bragg. You've got several people in the blogosphere and in the Twitter sphere who are advising him to do the same thing. Somebody who goes by the name of Peachy Keenan says Daniel Penny should sue the city of New York, the NYPD, the disgusting Neely family. That's it, Neely's. Alvin Bragg and Daphna Yaron for hundreds of millions in damages. Well, he certainly should keep that option open. Here's another one. Rob Carson's show says, if Daniel Penny needs money to sue Alvin Bragg in the state of New York for $1 billion, I would contribute. Super Mario Brother says, Penny's first lawsuit should be aimed at Soros puppet Alvin Bragg and work down the list of media that ruined his name and tried to ruin his life. That's a great point right there. I mean, here again, as I've said numerous times, the media, the mainstream media, is totally incapable of any form of shame. And they'll go after anybody who's on the side of law and order, which in this case, Daniel Penny was. He was clearly on the side of law and order. He was the Good Samaritan. He was saving other passengers on that subway and just leave it to the mainstream media, those filthy bastards, to go after Daniel Penny. Samantha Flom, writing for Epoch Times, says the tech tycoon Elon Musk's plans for the Department of Government Efficiency, you know, DOGE, include taking a hard look at the assistance that the United States provides to foreign countries. In other words, foreign aid. Now, I've been walking the planet for a long time. And during my entire life, I have never known the United States not to be doling out a lot of foreign aid. Now, Samantha says that ever since President-elect Donald Trump tapped Musk and entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy to spearhead his administration's new cost-cutting initiative last month, People have been floating their ideas for federal programs and regulations to get rid of. And joining in on December 6th was none other than former Representative Ron Paul. You remember him? And he proposed an end to all foreign aid. And he wrote on X, he says, here's an easy one for @Doge. Eliminate foreign aid. It's taking money from the poor and middle class in the U.S. and giving it to the rich in poor countries, with a cut to the facilitators in between, which is so true. And he went on to say that Americans don't want their government to borrow more money to spend on foreign aid. Besides, it's the immoral transfer of wealth, and it's unconstitutional, and he's right on all counts. Now, Ron Paul accompanied his comments with a chart from Statista showing that the United States was by far the largest donor of humanitarian and worldwide aid in 2023, shelling out nearly $9.5 billion to other countries. And that's more than four times the $2.1 billion donated by the second largest donor, the European Commission. Now, sharing the former congressman's post, Musk wrote that Doge will address this with full transparency for the American people. Ramaswamy also weighed in, saying that much of the U.S. foreign aid isn't even authorized by Congress, which I didn't know. So that makes it even more serious. Now, humanitarian assistance is just one form of foreign aid that the United States doles out. I mean, others include the direct provision of commodities and equipment, technical assistance, funding for infrastructure, and support for foreign governments and international organizations. And I have to wonder if leaving billions and billions of dollars worth of equipment behind while exiting Afghanistan, I wonder if that counts as foreign aid. It should. And according to the Congressional Research Service, Congress appropriated $66.1 billion in foreign assistance for fiscal year 2023. Now, Trump himself has eyed slashing foreign aid in the past, and he tried several times to cut foreign assistance under his first administration, but those attempts were rejected by Congress. Now, our majority in Congress, is that going to play into this at all? I don't know. Because here again, when we examine that the fact that our legislators in Washington are only paid by the government to the tune of, I think, what is it, $174,000, $175,000 a year, and that is not enough money to live on in Washington, D.C. If you look into what it costs to live in D.C. or the D.C. area, you go across the river to Alexandria, Virginia, it's very expensive. So these legislators live through payoffs, and a lot of these payoffs come from foreign entities looking for more foreign aid. So you see, we have this catch-22 going here. And although backing for foreign aid has traditionally been bipartisan, a survey conducted in June by the Chicago Council of Global Affairs found that support has diminished amid recent conflicts in Europe and the Middle East. True. Of the 2,106 adults surveyed, half of them, 50% right down the middle, said they wanted to reduce military aid to other nations, and 51% supported cuts to foreign economic aid. So maybe Trump can get some traction this time around. I'm going to emphasize that word, maybe. I mean, it remains to be seen whether that shift is going to be enough to convince lawmakers to strike all types of foreign assistance from the annual budget. Now, Musk and Ramaswamy have also targeted non-governmental organizations for funding cuts. Lord knows the NGOs have had a lot to do with bringing all of these illegal aliens into the country. And as the leaders of Doge, those two guys are going to partner with the Office of Management and Budget to issue recommendations and guidance from outside the government. And in announcing the new initiative, Trump described it as potentially the Manhattan Project of our time. I like that. He issued a statement, Trump did, posted on X on November 12th. He says, I look forward to Elon and Vivek making changes to the federal bureaucracy with an eye on efficiency and at the same time making life better for all Americans. Importantly, we will drive out the massive waste and fraud that exists throughout our annual $6.5 trillion of government spending. They'll work together to liberate our economy and make the U.S. government accountable to we the people. Understand this, that when you do something, the likes of which Donald Trump is proposing, it has kind of a snowballing effect because you cut here, you cut there. You eliminate this organization, you eliminate that organization, you cut these government jobs. Bear in mind, the single largest employer in the United States is the United States. The United States government, the single largest employer in the country. There is no way a country can stay financially afloat when it operates like that. It just can't. It's mathematically impossible. And when you go back and you look at how much our national debt has grown in the last 4 years, you really probably should start investing in gold or shoving money under your mattress, because this won't end well. So these changes have got to come. Chris Powell, writing in Trending Politics, says it's a list that year after year sparks debate. The contenders for Time Magazine's Person of the Year. And in 2024, that conversation carries heightened weight as global leaders, influencers, and disruptors step forward in a time of uncertainty and political upheaval. Well, I like his description because, man, Lord knows we've been living that kind of a time since Joe Biden took the White House. And we were kind of living that same, I don't know, what did he call that? Time of uncertainty and political upheaval. We were living that during Donald Trump's first term in the White House. But it was a more positive time of uncertainty and political upheaval. Then Biden came in and it was all negative. Well, I mean, just the hope that people are feeling right now, knowing that Donald Trump is back. All we have to do is keep Trump healthy and alive. So anyhow, he continues. This guy, Chris Powell, he continues. From the corridors of power in Washington to the tumultuous streets of Russia, Time has unveiled a short list that reflects a year marked by major elections, societal reckoning, and personal perseverance. And this year's finalists apparently include figures who are no strangers to headlines, and some are political powerhouses making comebacks, others are fresh faces breaking barriers, and a few, like former President Donald Trump, are reshaping the very direction of nations. I like the way he puts that, because he couldn't be more accurate. The 45th president of the United States made history yet again in 2024, becoming only the second president in American history to serve non-consecutive terms after winning the November election. Now, Trump's victory defied expectations and cemented his dominance within the Republican Party. I mean, face it, the man is running the Republican Party. We have an administrator, you know, the chairman of the DNC, of the RNC. That's the administrator, but the true leader of the Republican Party and all things Republican is none other than Donald J. Trump. And that's the way it should be right now. It really should. I mean, somebody's got to keep the Republican Party on the straight and narrow. We have a lot of rhinos to get rid of, you know. So Trump's victory defied expectations and cemented his dominance, as well as his broad appeal among working class voters and, oh, man, the millions of disillusioned Americans. Riding a wave of voter dissatisfaction with the previous administration's policies, Trump's return to the White House signifies not just political resilience, but a seismic shift in U.S. governance. Boy, is that ever the truth. A seismic shift in governance. So Time's consideration of Trump is hardly a surprise. His influence on the American political landscape, whether admired or criticized, is undeniable. And then, of course, when you eyeball the left and their criticism of Trump, they criticize him just because he's Donald Trump, just because he is conservative. But is he really? If you were to look at the definition of the word conservative, is Donald Trump really conservative? Fiscally, yes. But is he conservative idealistically? And this is something it's not essential that I have an answer to it, but we should consider this. Is he really all that conservative when it comes to the idealism behind those people who voted for Donald Trump? Do you think these people who voted for Trump voted because they were conservative? That these were all conservatives who stepped into the voting booth and said, Donald Trump's the man. He's the only way to a bright future for this country. Well, I doubt it. I think there were a lot of liberals who went into the voting booth and realized that if true liberalism is to survive, you didn't think I was going to bring up that idea, right? True liberalism. What is true liberalism? True liberalism is right there on the surface of our Constitution, our Bill of Rights. That is liberalism. Opportunity, equal opportunity for all. Not equal outcome, but equal opportunity. You work harder, you're more prone to success. Equal opportunity, freedom of speech. Banishing racism forever. And that means banishing racism on the part of people of all races. You know, for many years it was believed that only white people could be racist. Well, that's been proven wrong many, many times over. But believe it or not, as recently as the 1980s, it was believed that black people or any people of color could not be racist. But if you want to see true racism in practice, look at the Asian culture right here in America. Asians are extremely prejudiced against other Asians, Asians of other nationalities. The Chinese can't stand the Koreans and the Japanese, etc. Now, here in the United States, that has really subsided to a great degree. But you go to those countries. Oh, man. So, I don't know. Time magazine has a big job ahead of them in selecting their person of the year. Kamala Harris. You got Vice President Harris, once seen as a rising star in the DNC, had a year filled with political highs and lows, mostly lows. I mean, after Biden stepped aside in July, Harris embarked upon a grueling 107-day presidential campaign. And the effort to keep Democrats unified and energized, of course, faltered. And why wouldn't it falter? Look at the economy. I don't care if you're a Republican or Democrat, you still have to buy the groceries. And it becomes so apparent every time you go to the store. Prices have gone up tremendously in the last 4 years. You try to buy a car lately? My God, the prices are insane. The cost to educate your kids, just to put your kids through public school, the costs have gone up. Look at what it costs to buy clothes for your kids. So the effort to keep Democrats unified and energized faltered because of not just the economy, but that's a good place to start. I think a lot of hardcore Democrats, I'm not talking about far left-wing Democrats, I'm talking about traditional Democrats, moved over to our side. Because we're behaving like Democrats used to. We're anti-war. We don't want a nuclear war. And we're starting to knuckle down on this foreign aid crap, as we mentioned a few minutes ago. All right, so that's two. That's Donald Trump, Kamala Harris. How about Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister? He remains a polarizing yet prominent global figure. And this was a year that saw intense military operations against Hamas, following their attacks. And Netanyahu's leadership steered Israel through one of the most turbulent chapters in decades. Now, Yulia Navalnaya. Who is Yulia Navalnaya? Well, after the death of her husband, Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. There you go. There's the connection. Yulia Navalnaya emerged as a powerful figure on the world stage. And Navalnaya's unwavering courage in continuing her husband's fight against authoritarianism has turned into her personal symbol, and I guess becoming a national symbol of resistance, both in Russia and beyond. So Time's recognition of Navalnaya underscores the global yearning for democracy amid rising challenges to freedom. I think that in the not too distant future, there will be an upheaval, a major upheaval in Russia. And I don't know if it'll spell the end of Putin, but I think Putin's going to get a wake-up call. Here's one that kind of, I don't know, it kind of surprised me. But then she is a very elegant lady. And she exudes positivity, and that's Kate Middleton, Princess of Wales. And of course, she captured headlines this year for not her royal duties, but for her deeply personal health struggles. She had a cancer diagnosis and subsequent treatment, and she managed to bring public attention to the balance between privacy and the expectations placed on public figures. And when it comes to public figures, they don't get any more public than her. Her bravery, her openness resonated with millions, solidifying her as a deeply admired modern royal. How about Elon Musk? Well, they would have been remiss if they hadn't included him. Tech mogul, political provocateur. I like the role that he's playing now. Will I like this guy 10 years from now? I don't know. But I sure do like the way he's operating these days. He's waking the world up to some real truths that otherwise we would be denying. And he remains at the intersection of technology, innovation, and influence. And from his ventures in artificial intelligence and space exploration to his political endorsement of Trump, Elon Musk has had a hand in reshaping conversations on progress, freedom of speech, big time freedom of speech. My God, he should get a Nobel Peace Prize for that. And the future of humanity. His role in the 2024 election as a high profile Trump supporter only expanded his influence. So, it is expected the Times selection will surface tomorrow, Thursday, and it's going to cap off a year defined by political realignment, a considerable amount of political alignment, personal courage, and societal transformation. Stay tuned. To the Comedy Corner with Bobby Tessel.
So I'm in the bathroom at Target. Not right now. They have a sign on the wall that says, "Anyone who maliciously defaces the walls with paint is guilty of vandalism." And I thought, if there's some guy in a Target bathroom just randomly painting the walls, I'm pretty sure he doesn't know what malicious means. Sometimes when I'm bored and or feeling mean-spirited, I like to go to the grocery store and I will go up to the deli counter and they're like, "Hi, can I help you?" And I'm like, "Yes, you may. I would like 1/5 pound of turkey." And let the games begin. It's always fun to see what they're going to come back with. It has never been 0.2 on the scale. Sometimes they try to talk me out of the order. This guy's like, "Hey man, can I get you like a 1/4 pound or a 1/2 pound? Please?" I'm like, "Nope. 1/5. Good luck. Stay in school." I finally finished the book I was writing last week. Thank you. That's not what I was fishing for. But I did. I finished it. It's cool. It's an autobiography. It's a list of all the books I've read. I was in a minor car accident, and it was my fault. I hit someone from behind, and because I was checking out some woman walking down the sidewalk. Such a bummer. Even more of a bummer, she came over to see if we were okay, and she was ugly. That's a double whammy right there. Have you ever seen ugly people driving really fast? It's like, where can they possibly be going? A lot of times we see those signs that say no U-turns allowed, so what I do, I just make mine in the shape of a W. I'm here to teach.
Get out there and make it a terrific day. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.